Rich Kimble with you. Carrie Haskell back from New Orleans just to be here in studio today to be able to talk to our first guest in the second hour who joins us through the magic of technology, Stephen Tobolowsky with us. Hello there, Stephen.
Hello, Rich. Hello. Hello, Carrie. It's so good to hear your sweet voice. It's so good to reach out and touch someone that is friendly.
How have you been since last we talked, which I think was back in the springtime?
It's been crazy because I've been working a lot, but there's very little work in California. So that seems illogical, but it's true. So I have to go to different places to work. I'm about to go to Woodstock, New York.
Wow.
In a few days to shoot a movie there, which is why I look like Grizzly Adams. But I did three projects in Portland, Oregon. There's a lot of work there. Three projects in Salt Lake City. One project in Toronto. They asked me to do a four-month project in Cape Town, Africa. South Africa, Cape Town. And I said, no, I'm not going to go to Cape Town with the world always on the brink of war, and then I'm going to be in Cape Town, an old white man walking in Cape Town. It's just like red meat to the lions. I'm not going to do it. And it's been crazy, but I'm happy that I'm still working.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So tell us about the beard. You gave us advance warning to be prepared for this.
Yeah, it's something that I think Stanislavski. I'm pulling out my Stanislavski club on the director of this, and also the producers, and also Corbin Burnson, who called me up. Corbin wanted me to play his best friend in this show. And what this show is about Corbin and I play two hippies who went to the musical festival in Woodstock in 68, but we never left.
We never left.
So now I'm living there in Woodstock. Corbin's in Woodstock. My girlfriend is Susan Rattan, and I think his wife is Barbara Hershey. And so we have all these people here. So anyway, Corbin was saying it would be a good idea. Now I'm having this hot and heavy romance with Susan. And he says it would be a good idea if you just let your beard grow and looking like the derelict I look like now. And I said, Corbin, when was the last time you've been with a woman? Have you ever been with a woman when you have scruff? It's the one thing a woman says is that's got to go. That's got to go. And I said, I have a scene in there where I'm talking about how hot and heavy Susan are. And I go, I guarantee Susan Rattan would say, Stephen, shave. No kissy kissy, no touchy touchy. If that scruff doesn't go because it just rips me to ribbons. So shave. So anyway, what I'm doing now is this beard is growing. And now my wife, Anne, here is bearing the brunt of this gruffy, gruff beard. And I am hoping that when I get to Woodstock in a couple weeks, they say, you know, you're right. Or Susan will say, Stephen, you got to cut that. I would never let you kiss me with that. You know, so I'm hoping against hope that logic prevails. And they don't want me just to keep this beard so I look like an old hippie.
Wow. Now, see, Carrie had the absolute opposite reaction when he shaved his beard earlier in the year. And Carrie, your wife, acted like she didn't know who you were.
Yeah, Loretta really was unhappy when I shaved my beard off. And I haven't. This is just stubble now. I'm planning to grow it back over the winter, but she's very happy that I said, yeah, I am going to bring it back. But she every once in a while, since I shaved it in February, since then, every week or two, she goes, when are you growing that beard back? I'm like, is it just that it covers up my face? Is that what you like about it? She goes, no, I just like it. But I secretly think she just thinks that the more my face is covered, the better off she is.
Well, you know, there is a thing in, I guess it began in restoration literature, maybe a little older, or a little younger than Restoration drama called the Gestus, the Gestus, and that they would write characters, and it is a characterological gesture that defines that person. And I would have to agree with your wife, in a way, that beard is your Gestus. your beard, I see you coming down the street in Bangor. I see you walking. I see that beard first. I see that. That's the first thing I see. And I go, here comes Carrie. Now we're going to have coffee. And it'll probably be on him.
I did have it for a little bit over 25 years. So there were a lot of people that were just really shocked the first time they saw me without one.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Including my daughter. Who had never seen me without one.
What did she say?
She actually said, "Oh, I sort of like it." She thought it was she liked it more than my wife barely tolerates it. So it was no contest between the two of them.
Now, what about you, Stephen? Because you and Anne are on grandparent duty. What do they think of this scruff here?
I think the children are scared of me, which is fine, because that means Anne has to do all of the work, which she usually does anyway. But we had little baby Ember today, and Ember is completely different than Dior. Baby Dior likes to do things Anne does. She likes to cook in the kitchen with Anne, and she likes to pretend to clean the house with Anne. Baby Ember is about 1.5 or so, something like that. And she is a destruction machine. She likes to see something. She wants to see it break. And so she goes through the house. She's like, and so we're always just watching her like a hawk to make sure that no chaos really follows. But we're very lucky. Dior, like, when Dior spends the night, I start telling her stories. I get in bed and I start telling her stories about the lion and the king in the castle. And she goes, Papa, don't tell me about lion. Don't tell me. No, I don't want to hear any story about the king, Papa. No. I said, well, what story do you want to hear, Dior? She says, tell me a story of what you did when you were 4.
Oh.
That's Dior.
Wow.
Ember wants the same story all the time, from the beginning to the end. So we know, you know, the Ember story, you know, we pull out the Ember story when she's there. She pulls out the Ember story. She wants the Ember story. And that's what she gets when she spends the night. And that's, it's about the dragon who wants the cookie. You know, that book where there's the little child is afraid that there's a dragon living in his house.
Right.
And the dragon comes up and eats cookies. And then he finds out it's really just the furnace in the basement. And he has nothing to be afraid of. And they all celebrate by eating cookies. Dior, Ember just likes the cookies. So we have to give her cookies at the end of the story. Real cookies.
We're talking with Stephen Tobolowsky here on Dante. You mentioned Salt Lake City. Does that mean another Hallmark movie for you?
No. Not yet. I would love to do another home. Let me say, it's a great group of professionals. But I'm, I think I did 3 Hallmark movies, 3 of them, but in Salt Lake, this last time I did a science fiction, show, and. Yeah, no Hallmark movies yet this time. But this is an interesting thing politically to understand. The Hallmark building where they produce things is walking distance from my house right here. I could walk to it and it's 10 minutes away. And that's where all the producers are and everything is. However, the first Hallmark movie film I was here in California. They don't do it in California anymore because the film licensing is so expensive. So they moved to Utah. And so they started making Hallmark films in Utah. And now the government in Utah has increased the licensing fee for films in Utah. So Hallmark is moving again.
Uh-huh.
And where I heard that they were moving was maybe to the Bahamas.
Oh, well, that's not bad. Wow.
Yeah, I'm going to end up in Cape Town anyway. Yeah, you know, where they have no union crews and no permit fees to film. But that's what's happening. People are trying to move to where they don't have to pay enormous fees to film. That's what's happening.
That's the main driving force of even more than the film tax credits and that sort of stuff used to be.
Yeah, it's more because if you think about it, and I'll go to that nasty word AI. Now they have a lot of technology to create almost any world they want on film. They could make your film look like it's in Berlin. They could anywhere. They could do anything visually, so you don't have to actually go to that place where you get that background. They can make you go to the place that's the cheapest, and then the engineers will put in the background that makes it look like you're in the jungle or you're in New York or London or whatever. And you just walk down a sound stage with little purple lights here and there as to where to walk, and then they fill everything else in. So that's what's happening with the film business now. Mm.
You did Lopez versus Lopez. Is that right?
That was amazing. Yeah, it was right after I did Freaky Friday Part 2, which was first called Freaky Friday, something like Aftershock. That was the title they gave it. Now they're calling it Freakier Friday or Freakier Friday. Or I don't know. But it was we shot that here in California. And it was amazing. I had a strange experience the last day I was shooting. And it was a scene in the detention hall. And I couldn't remember a single line in the scene. Not a single word. Now, I knew the words, but suddenly nothing was in my head. I couldn't remember the lines. Now, they were shooting over my shoulder onto the kids in the class, so they didn't have to see that I didn't know anything. And so they hand me a script to read my lines with the camera shooting over my shoulder, and I couldn't see the words on the page.
Wow.
So I'm terrified now. I finished shooting, and the director said, on the other side, she says, and just wonderful people. She was wonderful, Nisha. She was wonderful. And she said, just make stuff up if you want. It's okay. You know, because what you make up is funny and we enjoy it. So just make it up if you can't remember. Just don't even worry about it, because we have the kids' reaction. So whatever you say, it really doesn't matter. You know, it'll be fine. So I came home and I was very shocked over what happened. And I called Debbie Wolf. Now, Debbie Wolf was one of our head writers on One Day at a Time. And now she is the showrunner of Lopez versus Lopez. So I called Debbie the next day and I said, Debbie, I know you guys are planning to have me come on and do something in a couple weeks. I said, but I had this weird thing happen to me yesterday. And I like Lopez versus Lopez, and I don't want to ruin the show. Because when you do a sitcom, when you do Freaky Friday or Freakier Friday, when you do Freakier Friday, you're doing a movie, right? They're right. Shooting over my shoulder. They'll pick the take where I get it right once. But when you do Lopez versus Lopez, you have a live audience. Mm. You're shooting it like a play. And if I go on in that first scene that I'm in and I can't remember a word I'm saying, it'll make the audience scared for the show. It'll bring the whole show down. And so I said to Debbie, you know, if there's any way you could shoot this more like a movie than like a stage play, because I don't want to ruin your show. And she said, would you be okay if we pre-shot all of your scenes before the audience comes in? And then we'll bring the audience in and do the scenes in front of the audience. And if you get them, fine. If you don't get them, it really doesn't matter. And I go, that's great, Debbie. Thank you. And we did the show. We finished doing all my scenes. It took until about 30 minutes before the audience came in. But we got all of my scenes pre-shot and all my close-ups pre-shot. Everything was fine. Then they brought the audience in, and for the most part, it all worked great. And I didn't have this problem. But I ended up calling a doctor And I'm saying, I had this problem. And he says, you have to come in immediately. So I go to the ear doctor to say, because the fact that you couldn't, you know, hear the you know, that you were having pressure in your head with your ears, I think you need to go to the heart doctor and have him check out your heart. That sounds like a heart problem. So I go to my heart doctor, and a lot of people are lucky enough not to have heart doctors. But in my life, I've had a triple bypass. I got a heart doctor. I have several of them, in fact. So the heart doctor did whatever, and he says, you need to go to the brain doctor.
No, dear.
On the same day. So I went to the ear doctor, who goes to the heart doctor. Then I went to the brain doctor, and he does this thing on me called the Epley maneuver. Have you ever had that?
I have not. I haven't even heard of it. I may have tried that with a girlfriend in college, but I don't think so. No.
It's when you suffer from vertigo.
Oh.
And he said, my symptoms were all related to vertigo.
Wow.
And so let's try this. And he did it, and I immediately felt better.
Wow. What do they do in the Epley maneuver?
Well, in the Epley maneuver, you kind of get on your knees, and you're on a table on your knees, and you turn your head to one side, and then he pulls you down really fast to the end of the table. And so your head is at a tilted angle, and it goes down very fast, and he holds you there for 30 seconds. And then he pulls you up really fast and turns your head the other way, and you go down again really fast. So it's like some kind of chiropractic maneuver that you feel like your head's getting ripped off. But when it finished, the spinning of the room stopped, and I was able to see clearly. I was able to hear clearly. And he gave me a little piece of paper as to how to do the Epley maneuver at home on your own. So I was doing that for a few weeks, and now I'm better. But you remember David Chen, my partner in crime, doing the podcast.
Right.
So David came to L.A. About 2 weeks ago, went out to dinner with David and his wife, Ellen. And he says, it's been a wild trip. You know, Ellen had this thing where she suddenly had vertigo. She couldn't see and she couldn't hear. Huh. And I go, what? That's the same thing I had. What is it? And he said, well, the doctors we went to in Seattle said it is a symptom of long COVID.
Boy.
So they said, have you had COVID recently? I said, well, I had COVID when I was doing a project in Portland. I got COVID. That was at the end of June. And that was the second time I had COVID in my life. And he said, well, you could be suffering from long COVID. That's what these symptoms are, I think. So if there's anyone on this microphone that can hear this, that have had the same symptoms in Maine, tell Rich, tell Carrie, you know, that this thing is going around, and it may be an after effect of this recent thing of COVID.
So I don't know much about vertigo, but it's an inner ear imbalance, right? It is sort of the main, so the maneuver must reset your inner ear balance. Okay.
Well, I had it once, and a doctor said vertigo is a symptom. You know, it's not a diagnosis. It's a symptom of something else that's going on with you.
Yes, yes. You've got these little things inside your ear that only do one thing, and they say, this way is up. That's all they do. These little things that say up is this way, and they're all together. And so that's how you know what up is and what down is, because these little things say up. But if these things, due to infection or an injury or something, like you're saying, Rich, if it gets out of where they're supposed to be and gets in the cochlea, in the kind of spirally thing, then in your inner ear, then the up signals are coming from multiple directions. They're not all together pointed up. They're pointed down, sideways, whatever. And so you get this wild spinning sensation that is terrifying. You can't walk. You can't move. What? You can't even lie on the ground on your back. It's because you feel like you're falling up, sideways, down, all at the same time. It's horrible, horrible thing, you know. But I haven't had that for a few weeks, thank goodness. So that's kind of, but we got through Lopez, and it was wonderful. The show was wonderful. And afterwards, I just went up. This, if anybody out there, if you're producers, one of the big things you want to do being a producer is not only get your show in on time, but allow the people who work on the show to be at their best. And that's what Deb Wolf did. You know, she protected me, whether I had to do those scenes alone or not. She protected me. The whole group protected me. And I felt very safe that my stuff was in the can. So when the audience was there, I could, you know, fall on my face and it would still be great. But it was such a relief that it was in the can that the live show went great.
Oh, that's wonderful. Speaking of One Day at a Time, we had Mike Royce on a few days ago. You've got a wonderful event coming up this weekend.
Yes, tomorrow we're rehearsing. And there are three. Oh, gosh, I just wish this could go all over the country. Mm. There are three unproduced shows of One Day at a Time. And what we're doing is we're having a reading for Norman's
People for the American Way.
People
right?
for the American Way, Norman's charity. Dear Norman. Oh, Norman Lear. What a great, great man. So we're doing just a table read of these three scripts that are very, very funny and just delightful. And it's one of those things I'm so looking forward to seeing everybody again. We rehearse tomorrow, and then we do it at the Television Academy on Saturday, I guess it is. And I was asking Mike, before I knew he was going to be on the show, I said, you know, I'm going to be talking to Rich, you know, and maybe there's a way that we could get a feed to Maine so everybody gets it. And he goes, no.
Yeah.
It's a copyright thing that we can only do it in the auditorium, this one thing, for whatever reason. But it's delightful. I'm so happy to see everybody again. And the scripts are delightful. It's a bittersweet moment.
Yeah, and we were talking with Mike about it the other day. It doesn't happen very often that you see one of these reboots that not only matches the quality of the original, but I thought in many cases even exceeded it. And he was saying, you know, during the process, he was thinking, God, am I going to be the guy who ruins Norman Lear's legacy?
I could see Mike saying that. That's pretty hilarious. Yeah, no. And Mike is another guy. Like Deb Wolf, who worked on One Day at a Time. Mike was our showrunner on One Day at a Time with Gloria Calderon-Kellett. And they also protected us as a cast. We were protected. We felt like we were in this great creative space where we can do the best we could with Norman's work and with those great writers who worked on the show. It just so many memories from that show that were just a short one. Just a short one. We had one show that was so difficult. It was the end of season two. So Rita is in a coma,
right.
The entire show. And everybody has to come up and has a monologue where they try to talk to her in the coma. Now, doing these shows, you only really have 3 days to work on these TV shows. You have the first day where you have the read-through in front of the producers and the network. You have the second day where you block it, put it on its feet, and then the third day you rehearse all morning, try to get it together, and the network comes to see it that afternoon. So you have like 2.5, 3 days to get that up. And then the network makes their changes. The fourth day you do camera blocking, fifth day live audience. That's it. So you have to be good and you have to be fast. So Mike and Norman and Gloria were saying, we would like to rehearse on the weekend if we could and just do some extra time. And it happened to be Rosh Hashanah. And so they asked me, they said, Stephen, well, they asked me privately, they put a gun to my head. They came up to me and said, Stephen, you know, we're thinking about having to rehearse on Rosh Hashanah. So would you do that? And I said, yes, I will. I will do that. Because Rosh Hashanah is a holiday which celebrates the beginning of the world. And I could think of no better way of celebrating the beginning of the world than doing this magnificent show that's so filled with insight and love and depth. Anyway, so we're rehearsing on Rosh Hashanah, on the Sabbath on Rosh Hashanah. And Norman Lear comes down and takes me aside. And we go over to another part of the set that's dark. And he sits down and he says, "Stephen, tell me about some of your Rosh Hashanahs when you were a kid." So I start telling Norman my Rosh Hashanah stories. And then he starts telling me some of his. And it was one of the most meaningful holiday times I ever had, sitting on a couch with Norman Lear, just talking about Rosh Hashanah and being able to work on this great, great show. It's not what you should do, but you do a lot of what you shouldn't do when you're an actor. But it was powerful and it was meaningful. And I think I always loved Norman because of it. And we always had a kind of close relationship. He championed my books, you know, all the, you know, Dangerous Animals Club and My Adventures with God. He helped produce when I did in My Adventures with God, I did a play version of Good Day at Auschwitz, the story of the Auschwitz survivor who was at our synagogue. And Norman threw money in to make that happen. You know, it's just a dear, dear, great, great man. And always miss him and always felt lucky that I got to know him.
Well, have a wonderful time seeing everybody, working with everyone. Again, this weekend, we will be there in spirit. Stephen, yes. Wonderful to talk with you. As always, beard or no beard, you are always welcome here.
And I will let you guys know, I will send you an email and maybe even a photo before we shoot if the beard went or not as soon as Susan sees this.
Now, is Corbin Burnson growing one too?
Yes, he is.
Oh, okay.
But he's alone in this show.
Oh.
His wife has left him. So naturally, he should look like a grubby, grubby, horrible person. Me, I'm having a wild affair.
Well, we look forward to the photos and the stories and to see the finished product. Stephen, thank you as always. Be well.
You got it, Rich. And good to talk to you again, too, Kerry.
Always good to see you, Stephen.
Adios.
Stephen Tobolowsky with us here on Downtown.